this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Y'allitics. Solo once again, Jason Wheeler here flying solo. Jason Whiteley flying somewhere else in the world. I don't know where he is and haven't really checked on him. So we'll see. We'll see if he comes back next week. If not, I'll just do it again. We're talking today about something that's really transformative that happened in this past legislative session. And yet we didn't hear a whole lot about it. And even still now, after Governor Abbott signed this piece of legislation into law, we still haven't been hearing a whole lot about it. And so that's what Y'allitics is here for. We're going to hear about it today. It is SB 840, Senate Bill 840, in the legislature this time around. The governor signed this into law after both chambers passed it in the legislative session. It will officially become state law in September of this year. And this is going to have some sweeping impacts on cities, especially the larger cities around Texas and how they're developed. Are you having trouble finding housing? This may help with that, but does it bring some unintended consequences with it too? Depends on who you talk to. We've brought in Barrett Lindberg, the co-founder of Savoy Equity Partners in Dallas. Barrett, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
You've been talking about this because this is definitely right there in your wheelhouse and is very much a part of the business that you are in. Tell us just a little bit about SB 840.
Sure, this comes up in every lunch and coffee conversation with developers right now. So
this is all the buzz.
Definitely. And so what it does is this new law, which passed by a very large majority in the last state legislative session.
Mm-hmm. Bipartisan.
Bipartisan way, yeah.
But kind of quietly. I mean, I guess we were all focusing on vouchers.
There was a lot of stuff that
passed. And then this was just happening over to the side.
Right. So what it says is that anything that's any property that's in a city with a population of over 150,000 and in a county with a population of over 300,000. Mm-hmm. So think about Dallas, Plano, McKinney, Frisco, Fort Worth, those places. Any land that is zoned for office, commercial retail, hotels, industrial, any commercially zoned land is now automatically zoned for multifamily.
Okay, so you can build apartments there.
You can build apartments
as long as it was already zoned as commercial or industrial, et cetera.
That's correct.
Okay.
And you don't have to go to city council to make that happen. It's just automatic.
Because it used to be that you would. You'd have to go to meetings. You might have to have public hearings on this and have citizen input. And this process can really take a long time.
That's right. As a developer, if I see a site that I want to build apartments on, and I say, man, that would be wonderful, but currently it's zoned for office, well then I might say, I have a shot for that. Let me go talk to my city councilman. Is he behind it? Am I going to have neighbors who hate this? Hmm. Okay. Well, if I think I have a shot, then I might engage a zoning consultant, start the process, spend some money, and then a year or two later, I may be able to get it zoned for multifamily, at which point I would hire an architect and a civil engineer to start the process of actually designing a building. And then a year or two after that would have a building complete.
That's a lot of waiting to get something done when you identified it as being something that you'd really like to work on. And let's say that this is a vacant warehouse when you first see it, mm-hmm. And you think, well, yeah, let me transform that into apartments. And I think most people would think that you would be able to do that pretty quickly if you just go in and buy the land and you've got the money to do it and put up the apartment building. It's not that simple.
Right, so this new law takes what I just said is a five-year process, takes 2.5-3 years out of that process, which is pretty amazing. Now, what a lot of people hear is like, oh great, well there's going to be a bunch of like skyscrapers going up everywhere. Well, it's not really like that, because this state law is fairly thoughtful about a lot of things. So what it says is, well, if this was zoned for office, and the office zoning that City of Dallas put here says that the office can only be 60 feet tall, well, then the apartment building that can be built there is only allowed to be 60 feet tall.
Okay, so it has to adhere to whatever the regulation was.
That's right. So if it was zoned for a convenience store or a CVS, let's say a CVS, which would be maybe neighborhood retail. Mm-hmm. So if it's zoned for neighborhood retail and it says 35 feet tall for mm-hmm. neighborhood retail, well, now it's zoned for apartments automatically, but it has a 35-foot height restriction.
Okay, so you can't just come in and do whatever you want.
That's right, you can't go in and do whatever you want because that height restriction matches whatever height restriction the previous zoning type had, so there's thought behind it.
And you have to include multifamily in there.
That's right.
To be able to do this, and it has to be something that's been sitting there for a while.
No, it doesn't.
Well, okay.
So if it's, to continue with the CVS example, say that there's an active CVS there, but their lease is going to expire in 3 years.
Okay.
Okay, great. Maybe I go buy the CVS, wait for their lease to expire. I plan my apartment development while the CVS is still paying income.
And you're ready to go.
Then the CVS leaves and you build apartments after. Huh. So there's some unique nuances to how it could work.
And so are we going to see, depending on who you ask right now, you see apartments going up all over the place in some of the cities around Texas. Are we going to see apartments just going up everywhere on steroids?
Well, what you see is a lot of apartments being completed that started 5 years ago, mm-hmm. right? I just told you how long it takes to get built. So all these started 5 years ago when interest rates were really low, right? When money was flying around. And that's not the case today.
Even though it's possible, let's say this law kicks in September,
sure.
Even though it's now possible, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to run out and go, well, let me borrow a lot of money at high interest rates now and take on a project that I might not have taken on before. You're still going to do that same due diligence that you would be doing right now.
That's right. So apartments that are actually breaking ground nationally, mm-hmm. are now back to very close to where they were in 2010, 2011, 2012, like right after the great financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means for the renter and people who are tracking the price of housing is that supply is going down and the cost to own or rent a home is going to go up unless mm-hmm. supply increases.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a good tool done by the folks down in Austin to try and increase supply.
Now, some cities may not love this because, basically they've been bigfooted here and told that, hey, we know that you have all of these regulations in place. Those don't matter. You're going to do what the state says on this.
That is true.
So you put out a tweet about this the other day, and I thought this was an interesting way of looking at it. You said that critics are saying that residents are losing their voice in development. That supporters are saying dead malls become housing for teachers and nurses, and that somewhere in the middle you find the reality that says the market just got a lot more freedom to solve the housing shortage. Ready or not, change is coming September 1st.
Yeah, I think that that's very true. Now, as a developer, if I go to Frisco or Plano or McKinney and I say, I have a new state law, I'm gonna drop the hammer, I'm gonna build this thing. Well, what's gonna happen? Let's pick Frisco. Mm-hmm. I walk in and I say, here's what I'm going to build, stamp the plans right now.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to say, this guy's crazy. We're going to make it a huge pain to give him a building permit, a site plan, like inspections. They're going to make my life really hard.
But you have the state law on your side.
Sure, I have the state law on my side, but that doesn't mean that they have to like make my life easy,
mm-hmm.
right? It just means that I have the state law on my side. So if a smart developer uses this, what they're going to do is they're going to walk in to the city planner, the developer, and they're going to say, hey, this new state law passed, guys. So I know that you have this zoned community retail, but with this state law, I can now build three-story multifamily, and I would like to do that. So what design would you like to see here?
So you think that's still going to happen, that collaborative process at the local
You're
going
to skip, you're going to be able to skip, the city council meeting. And you're going to be able to skip a lot of steps. But I think a smart developer is going to say, listen, I have the state law on my side. What do you want to see here?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of design? How many units? Like, how can we work together? Because now I have a little bit of leverage that I didn't have before. And so I think that's how the conversation's gonna go.
Do citizens, though, who live around it, do they lose their voice in this process if you don't have to go to that council meeting and listen to what they have to say?
To an extent, but I think that design standards will be changed. So currently, maybe design standards for a lot of these places only apply to multifamily. Mm-hmm. Well, now a town can apply the design standards to office, retail, and now they apply to everything.
So there's always a way to kind of get around it a little bit.
Yeah, well, so multifamily is still allowed, mm-hmm. but now it has design standards for trees and facades and things like that.
Something that the city may not have thought of before with it, you know, if it was, you know, commercial or industrial, for
That's
instance.
That's right.
Okay, so they can still have their input.
Correct.
What about with, let's say, schools and things like that? What if you, the developer, go, oh man, you know, look at that whole, you know, tract of land right there and those buildings, I could turn that all into apartments and, you know, bring in tons and tons of families, and maybe there's not a school set up for that in that area. Is that a growing pain? Is that something that's just got to be dealt with? Is it something that you run into now?
It's not something I run into now, and I'm not an expert on this, so I'm not going to go too far out of my wheelhouse, but what I know is that the school funding from the state comes from like a per capita. So how many people live in that area? So it's immediately there's gonna be a burden on that area, but in the long run, the school funding comes from the state based on how many people live in that area.
What do you think the bottom line is here as far as the developments that we're going to see? You know, there have been criticisms in recent years from people, especially you know, who, you know, maybe are on a fixed income or who are in, you know, lower income brackets, that they say, man, all these apartments are going up everywhere. That's great. My rent is high right now, and I can't afford any of the rents for any of these that are going up because they're all luxury apartments. Are we still going to keep seeing that trend?
Maybe, but there's something called filtering. Mm-hmm. And what filtering means is essentially supply and demand works. Mm-hmm. So even if all the new apartments that are being built cost $3,000 a month, mm-hmm. what that does eventually is it makes the units that were built 2 years ago cost less. Mm-hmm. And then the units that were built 5 years ago are going to cost less. And the units that were built 10 years ago cost less. So every new unit that delivers at the very top of the market impacts the units that were built prior to that. Mm. And I think the best thing that I've heard recently is that more expensive units that are delivered don't necessarily cause rents to go down immediately. Mm. They just slow the rate of rent increases.
Hmm. Okay, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Am I angry right now if I'm a developer who is going through the zoning process on properties and because, you know, I'm in different kinds of neighborhoods and I'm, you know, having to go through all of these meetings and I'm having to listen to all this citizen input and make changes and so forth. And now some people, you know, come September might be able to just walk in and go, that building, I'm going to turn that into apartments.
You might change your strategy. You know, this becomes the way of the world on September 1st. So if you're 6 months into what might be an 18-month process on September 1st, do you pull the ripcord and switch tactics? Mm. Maybe.
You think we'll see that?
Yeah.
Will you make use of this? I mean, are you already looking at this and thinking, hey, you know, there's that plum piece of property here and that one over there that I've been eyeing that I haven't touched because it seems like it'd be way too much trouble?
Yeah, so my firm does a lot of work within the city of Dallas, specifically in two neighborhoods, the Cedars and North Oak Cliff. We've been very fortunate in that they had master rezonings done over the past two decades. So most of the areas that we play in already have either mixed use or multifamily zoning. We've been very fortunate that we haven't had to go through the rezoning process. That doesn't mean we won't in the future, and this will be an incredibly good tool for us to have and to know how to use it.
So you talk to a lot of developers out there. Are they gearing up for this? I mean, is there anything that you can really do, you know, today, right now, in July, anticipating that that's coming in September? Are boots on the ground moving on this? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of developers who are very seriously looking at this, putting land under contract today, thinking that on September 1st, we're going to go in and submit for a site plan or a building permit, trying to use this as our method.
And one of the big things that this is going to change is that you'll no longer have to do these sort of analyses where, okay, well, what's the traffic going to be like that you're going to create with this big apartment building that you're putting in? You don't have to do any of that anymore.
Correct, because all that is part of the rezone process. that 18-month process, and now that's not necessary.
So in the end, if you're looking at this over the next year, 5 years, 10 years, what is the bottom line on this? What do you see in the future for our cities here in Texas with this law in effect?
Yeah, I think that they add more density, where there's commercial zoning and commercial property. And that's going to be where there's either vacant land today or where there's kind of underutilized commercial property. So office that's not doing well, dead malls, strip centers that aren't doing very well, things like that. And you're going to start to see housing or mixed-use development, and that's going to, number one, increase the housing supply, and number two, grow our tax base. Mm. And all those things are needed.
Is this going to start happening in September? Like, you're going to have people actually showing up to some of these city offices going, I've been wanting to do this forever at that site, and it's happening.
Well, they're going to start trying. There's going to be two interesting things. Number one, it's going to be interesting to see how all the different municipalities react. Mm-hmm. So which municipalities sue? Mm-hmm. Which municipalities fight?
You're not saying whether, you're saying which.
For sure. Okay. There will be lawsuits, and some won't fight it, some will, and who knows? Mm-hmm. And then number two, which stuff starts to go and starts to get built? Now, the average Joe on the street won't see any change for 2 or 3 years because development's hard and takes a long time. Mm. And then 10 years down the road, you'll really see a change.
So if you're somebody who's been out in the market and trying to find something and that you're not finding enough inventory out there, you're not gonna be thrilled come a year from now because it's really not gonna be that big of a change yet.
That's correct. Okay. In fact, we talked about it earlier, but right now we're at a kind of an all-time low or a 10-year low in the product that's actually breaking ground to be built. So a year or two from now, it's likely that rents are materially higher than they are today. Hmm.
If I'm a homeowner right now, and in some of these major Texas cities in particular, we've seen these huge run-ups in home prices in the last decade or so. And some of that is because of there's been a housing shortage. Am I not thrilled to see a lot more housing come online now because, I kind of like sitting on this big mountain of equity here in my home that has done pretty well over these years?
Yeah, I think they are two different markets, right, where you have kind of a rental market and a homeowner market. But they are correlated, and I think having more housing of all types is going to help. Mm-hmm.
And will there be some homeowners out there who will not be happy about, we all hear NIMBY, not in my backyard. A lot of times you'll see these big apartment developments in particular being fought in some neighborhoods, of single family homes. They don't want the apartments there. Are there going to be some unhappy homeowners out there who are just going to have to take it now because the state laws changed?
Yes, and the argument is, there are studies out there that say when you add more density, even near a single family neighborhood, that it actually increases the value of those homes because when you're adding any type of density, you're also adding amenities near that, just naturally, right? Mm-hmm. More retailers want to be near more density, mm-hmm. more restaurants, more all those things. And so it actually is improving the quality for the single family homeowners as well as those apartment dwellers.
So you might not like the apartment that's coming, but you might like all of the things
the
that come
that
with the
get,
apartment
and
building.
It's going to increase the value of your home.
Do you think that this is something that other states are going, I know that some other states have, kind of fiddled with the same ideas, but Texas is doing this in a pretty big way and it's happening fast. Is this something that's going to make us watched by other places to see, let's kick back and see how this goes?
Yeah, and this is a version of what was already done in Florida a few years ago called Live Local. Mm-hmm. So yes, you're going to see versions of this elsewhere.
Will there be unintended consequences? You are a developer by trade. You know that there are usually potentially unintended consequences with any project. Do you sense that there could be unintended consequences with this big change?
Don't know yet. In talking with some really good zoning attorneys, what they have said, and I don't know who wrote this, but what the really good zoning attorneys have said is this bill was written very, very thoughtfully by a very good zoning attorney. Hmm. And so will there be unintended consequences? The biggest unintended consequences that comes in Texas is that developers build too much. Mm-hmm. when they can, right? They build too much supply and they oversupply, and then the market corrects. So that could be in the short term something that comes out of it. But overall, we need more housing, and that's a good thing.
Is there a lot of money that's just sitting out there sort of on the sidelines that has been waiting for change like this? Is there a lot of interest in Texas, especially in the urban areas? I mean, we keep hearing about this growth story. You know, you talk about Dallas, for example, with all of the, you know, corporate headquarters that have come here, and we've got the Yall Street that's moving here and so forth. Is there a lot of money sitting and waiting to jump in, and does this help with that?
There's today, right, interest rates are high, rents have been fairly flat for the past year or two because of all the supply that's come online. So there have been a number of kind of headwinds for the apartment developers recently. So there's not this like tidal wave of money that's been waiting for this bill to happen. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it's gonna be just a ton of groundbreakings over the next 18 months. Do I think that over the next few years, this will make a meaningful difference in supply, especially urban infill supply? Yeah, because over the past 5 years, almost all this new supply has been out in the suburbs, mm-hmm. right? Allen, Melissa, Salina. Mm-hmm. And I think now it's gonna start coming back towards the city centers.
This has to be a boon too for some of these properties. I mean, you know, we all walk by, you know, some of these office buildings that, you know, have been through some difficult times, especially, you know, leading into COVID, post-COVID, you know, work patterns changed and so forth. And some of these buildings have been sitting vacant and, or, you know, half used or a third used. This is really going to perhaps change the game for a lot of those sites.
It is. And I think another thing we didn't talk about is, like, if you look at City of Dallas, our population really has not gone up in 4 or 5 years. So I think it went up 0.5%, it went down 1%, then it was flat, and now just this past year it went up 0.2% or something like that. But all the suburbs grow.
Yeah, regionally.
And the City of Dallas is flat. And a huge part of that is our housing. All this new supply that I just talked about that's come online over the past few years has not been in the City of Dallas. Hmm. It's been in the Metroplex, but not in the City of Dallas. Hmm. This bill specifically focuses on that, right? Cities of over 150,000, counties of over 300,000. And I think that'll be a big change that happens over the next few years, is it forces more housing in the urban centers.
Last thing I have for you is, immediately when I heard about this, I thought, man, you know, it would have been great to have been invested in some, you know, just like commercially zoned real estate or, you know, industrially zoned real estate. Are there people who have been holding on? I mean, you're out there, you know who the big owners of these, you know, parcels are and so forth. Are there people who have been holding on who are like, man, we might strike it rich now?
Yeah, I won't
or
name
may
any
have
names.
Already struck it rich.
I won't name any names, but there are some close-in suburbs that are notorious for not wanting multifamily. Mm-hmm. They have great income demographics, they have great schools. You know, they have all the ingredients are there, mm-hmm. for really good multifamily development, but they just don't want apartments, and they've fought them really hard over the past decade. Well, now all of a sudden you can buy that, you know, that strip center or that office building that's not doing very well and make it into apartments by right. That's the land you wanted to own.
Yeah. I have a second last question here. So I'm channeling Jason Whiteley. He's not here. I don't know where he is, but I have multiple last questions, so I am channeling him. You think, though, that before we get to September or around the time we get to September, we're going to see a flurry of these municipalities sort of hemming things up a little bit and addressing, like, well, what do we require of an office zoned area, and what do we require of an industrial zoned area, and maybe we can make that look a little bit better because that's going to maybe become apartments anyway, and we need to make it what we want it to be?
Yeah, there were a lot of city councilmen from municipalities that would have been affected, that are affected by this new law, that were testifying against its passage. Mm-hmm. So you can be sure that they are now upset that it did pass and figuring out how they can most effectively fight it.
So while a lot of Texas was sleeping or maybe focusing on vouchers, These folks were not. They were paying very close
That's
attention,
correct.
And they know they have a game plan going forward too in the months ahead. Barrett Lindberg, the co-founder of Savoy Equity Partners, which is doing a ton of work on apartment buildings and developments, particularly in the Oak Cliff, Bishop Arts area, as well as the Cedars right next to downtown Dallas. What is it, a quarter of a, where are you at now? How much have you been working with?
We're working on about $250 million of development, almost 30 projects, a lot of it new construction, and a lot of it in South Dallas. And we do the property management, the development, and the construction, so it's exciting.
You're a very busy man, so thank you for taking this much time with us.
Thanks so much.
All right, let's widen out the lens a little bit on this, just because this is a big deal, not only for cities here in Texas and for the state of Texas. This is something that's going on nationwide. This is a debate that's been happening. We want to bring in Dr. Cullum Clark. He is the director of the Bush Institute, SMU Economic Growth Initiative, and is an adjunct professor of economics at SMU. And today, Dr. Clark, you're joining us from someplace other than Dallas, where the Institute is located.
I am actually in Santa Fe, New Mexico right now. I'm delighted to say that my employer, the George W. Bush Institute, has a Work From Anywhere July policy. I recommend it to you and everybody else.
How do we get that thing started on a mass scale? What a great idea to spend a month in Santa Fe and just recharge your soul there. I wanted to bring you in here, no matter where in the world you were on this, because you've been talking about issues around this for a long time and how we're underhoused. And this isn't something that's just going on in Texas. I know that you've written about this, and we're looking at millions of units across the country that we are short right now. And what that does is, you know, we've got supply and demand. If we don't have enough supply of housing, demand goes up, and boy, so do those prices. And then a lot of folks are priced out of the market.
I agree with everything that you just said. We published a report that I wrote a couple of months ago that really goes kind of deep into all the data at the national level, but it also breaks it down at the level of, you know, individual metropolitan areas, including the Dallas-Fort Worth area and the other Texas metro areas. So we took a good look at it, and my conclusion was that America has underbuilt by about 6 or 7 million units, and that the vast majority of that underbuilding has happened in the 21st century, like i.e. back in at the turn of the century, we weren't in a fantastic place, but we were in an okay place on housing. Doesn't mean housing wasn't a challenge. It's always a challenge to actually adequately house our lowest income, most vulnerable residents, whether in Dallas or anywhere. But we made it a whole lot worse in the 21st century. So for a whole variety of reasons, we made it harder to build in cities everywhere. Some places much worse than other places. So in Texas, as bad as it is, we actually have been a better place than the vast majority of other states and metropolitan areas around the country to build, which is something that we show, I think, through a pretty thorough analysis in our report. But even so, we haven't built enough in Texas either.
You know, we've been hearing complaints about that, though, for years. What is the problem? So you trace this back to that whole financial crisis, the housing crisis that we had back in 2008. What happened there specifically that caused us to just get really shy about building? And why has it lasted for so long?
Well, we've had a long-term trend, and then the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis sort of doubled down on that trend. The trend has been towards an ever tougher regulatory environment in cities across our country, a regulatory environment that is more and more inclined towards, representing the wishes of what are oftentimes are a majority of residents in, you know, our cities, towns, neighborhoods. That they don't want to see a lot more housing get built, that they want to keep things kind of as they are. And for a variety, in a wide variety of ways, we made it harder through rules. So that really got going in the, you know, kind of latter part of the 20th century. And it's just accelerated, I think, through this century, although you could argue in the 2020s, we've had a bit of a turnaround in that. So we'll talk about that in a little bit, particularly in the context of Texas. 2008 financial crisis crippled the banking system, and it for a limited time of a handful of years, The whole financial system sort of pulled back from financing all aspects of housing and real estate development, whether financing the initial development of it or financing an individual family's purchase of a home. So when financing is tough, fewer things happen in the economy. That made it even worse, which is why if you look at the kind of the trend over time since the start of the 21st century, we had a growing problem in the early 00s. We had an extreme problem with new housing development from kind of the the death of Lehman Brothers late 2008 for about the next 4 or 5 years. Then we had an uptick. We went from really bad to kind of bad, and we've been sort of fluctuating around that ever since.
From really bad to kind of bad, and we're still kind of stuck there. Let's talk a little bit about, elections having consequences. You
Sure.
mentioning that at the local level, people seem to have, in a lot of cases, supported policies that have kind of kept new housing from happening. What's the thought then about local control here when you have a state that comes in and says, well, we're going to just do away with those local rules then, and we're going to make this happen across the state where the local municipality doesn't really have a say in many of these cases, and these places can be redeveloped and turned into mixed use or into multifamily?
You raise a really a thorny and interesting issue, I think, in the context of Texas or any state in our country. I will tell you, my own pretty strong inclination is to lean towards local control, kind of the concept that the government that governs best is the one that's going to be closest to the people, closest to their local needs, local preferences. And I think in Texas, we have a rich tradition of local control, and on the whole, it has served the state well. Even in housing policy, I would generally argue in more ways than not, we have benefited in Texas from allowing a high degree of local control. Why do I say that? Because a whole lot of localities in Texas, even if on the one hand there has been a lot of sentiment for sort of slowing down housing growth and trying to, stop the growth in traffic congestion and so on, there has been a pretty strong countervailing tendency, and that is that a whole lot of cities and communities around Texas are really built to grow. They're building new schools. They are trying to attract business. Their general policy orientation is to grow. And so oftentimes what that means is you have a bit of a schizophrenic attitude. Like we do want to attract more employers, we want to attract more jobs, but we don't want to have more housing or more traffic congestion, which is a contradiction in terms. Can't be done. Might be done in one particular neighborhood, can't be done across the whole city. So I think that, but in many respects, our tradition of local control has created a kind of an environment of intense competition for people and businesses, and that competition has made our state and our region stronger. Now, you turn to housing, and the issue arises, to what degree shall the state step in and, as you say, really kind of preempt what local governments would prefer to do? It's an interesting issue. Now, I don't think it really makes a lot of sense to be doctrinaire or really ideological on either pole of this debate. I don't really want the state to override every single last thing localities want to do in terms of housing. But I also don't want to say literally it's none of the state's business, period. Why do I say that? First of all, local governments are, as sometimes our state legislators point out, they are creatures of state law. They exist as a function of state law. The state does have some responsibilities for the well-being of the people of Texas. But they're also, specifically in the housing domain, I think there's a dynamic here that is worth noting. And that is that oftentimes local officials do, at some level, if you talk to them privately, they would say, we know we need more housing in our city. But they're afraid, if you will, of the voters. They know that if they say that in a city council meeting, they'll very likely bring out a lot of opponents to this or that project, and they will take some heat for it. But if the state government steps in and passes, let's say, reasonable, moderate legislation that to a moderate degree binds the hands of city governments, such that city leaders can sort of point to state government and say, our hands are tied, we have to do this. And yet the actual housing that gets built is probably what the local officials would like to see. you know, maybe actually that was a reasonable fix. Maybe that was a reasonable way forward for what is a significant problem.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, perhaps at the local level, they've been afraid of the voters, and that's why they haven't, you know, gone with these more pro-growth policies of creating more housing. I did think it was interesting that this does, you know, mainly affect the big cities in Texas, because the law specifically, you know, talks about it being a city of a certain size that has to adhere to this new law. And even with that, it was authored by a senator who is from a, you know, a smaller town kind of place. Up in Northeast Texas, Longview, that area there, where you don't have a lot of the big cities. And so the legislation was proposed by someone who came, you know, from a different part of the state that doesn't have such an urban concentration. But it did get bipartisan support in the legislature and pretty overwhelming support.
Look, if it were up to me, I would take the concepts in the pro-housing bills that the legislature has just passed and extend them to cities of all sizes across our state. Hmm. But, you know, we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. They passed a very significant reform, and it does apply to all cities over 150,000 and counties over 300,000. That amounts to about 20 places. 20 localities representing, I looked it up, it's just over 11 million people out of our state's roughly 31.5 million. So that's a pretty significant start. And they did the same thing both in SB 840 and SB 15, different legislation applied to the same places. Mm-hmm. So I think that also when we talk about the concept of SB 840 of allowing multifamily and mixed use homes to be built in areas that are zoned commercial, I think it's relevant in cities of all sizes, but it's most relevant in relatively large cities that have a lot of commercial real estate. Need to reimagine how some of that real estate is used, because oftentimes it's, you know, office that is has a whole lot of vacancies, probably never coming back. It's retail that in many cases is not thriving. So you really do have, if you were going to start someplace, you'd start in, you know, city of Dallas, city of Fort Worth, city of Austin, Houston, and so forth.
And again, the state mandating that, you know, that it's perfectly allowable now for developers to go into those, you know, the vacant places, maybe, you know, let's say a mall that's been sitting there and hasn't been used for some time and start creating housing there. It could be seen again by people who are, you know, in support of local control as heavy handed by the state. I know that you've said before in your writings that, you know, you do favor a lighter touch because you get concerned, I guess, that when the state mandates too much, that it leads to a lot of fighting and, of course, a lot of litigation. Is that where you see this headed next? Or do you think cities, you know, sort of see the writing on the wall here in Texas and go, well, you know, let's make the best of this that we can and adhere to this. And I mean, it's coming September.
Yeah, I think that it's going to stick, and I think people are going to, on average, like the results that they see. There are other places before Texas that have enacted similar legislation, not exactly the same, but in Florida, they passed something called the Live Local Act in 2023. The same year, Montana passed a series of acts that also covered similar ground. And then it's happened in cities like Minneapolis and Charlotte. In all those cases, it was controversial. In all those cases, it is leading to new incremental housing over and above what would have been built otherwise. I wouldn't say the results in any of those places have been so dramatic that it has sort of shocked people into kind of more aggressive opposition. I think it's pretty incremental. But when you actually look at, you know, how are people likely to respond when this kind of gets going? You know, I think that there's a very common human tendency to kind of react negatively when you hear about some new thing that's going to get built relatively close to your home, close to your neighborhood, and it's just an abstraction. It's just you have something in your mind's eye, but then the thing actually gets built and the thing actually, in many cases, looks pretty good. Yeah. And let's say it's a mixed use development, maybe mixed income also. And maybe it brings some, I don't know, new coffee shops, a new restaurant, whatever, into, you know, near where someone lives. Maybe it brings a little bit more walkability. And when people actually see the concrete thing in front of them, if it's reasonably well done, they sometimes say, well, actually, it's pretty good. I kind of like it.
And there's adaptation that occurs there.
And then people are adaptable. They're more adaptable than they think they're going to be. So when they experience a little bit of change and then they sort of get used to it, then actually it becomes the new normal. So I think it will stick, the concept of SB 840. And I think it'll have pretty meaningful impact. But I think in the context of a Dallas, it's going to have impact over a pretty, you know, Dallas is a big place, right? I mean, like more than 350 square miles. I mean, this is going to be spread over a vast area. I think it's, if it's, would you like to talk a little bit about, you know, kind of how it might play out?
Yeah, absolutely. What's your crystal ball say?
Yeah, so I've thought about that pretty carefully. I'm thinking about doing more research on it. But I think it's useful to kind of break down the geography of Dallas into two buckets. And the law itself has two buckets of activity. One is about office to residential conversions, which generally there we're talking about, you know, high-rise office towers, such as in Dallas primarily exist in the traditional Central Business District and in a few other areas like along the I-35 corridor. And then secondly, we're talking about areas that are zoned commercial that are all over this at one floor, retail, things like that. I think the bigger impact is the latter. The bigger impact is likely that we build a lot of what is really kind of envisioned by the law, you know, the classic apartment building that is probably four stories, you know, has some parking built in, that's, you know, kind of fills a city block or a significant part of a city block. And I kind of came up with a rough estimate just for very round number purposes that I think we might get something on the order of maybe 12,000 plus units out of that in the city of Dallas over, it'll take a while, maybe over 20 or 25 years. But it'll matter. Why do I think that? You know, some would maybe try to come up with more ambitious numbers, but we are kind of constrained by the fact that areas zoned commercial they're a pretty small part of the city. You know, they're like 6-7% or something of the city's landmass, and in many cases, the commercial uses that are kind of currently in place are gonna go on. They're gonna keep on being used exactly the way they are, and it takes time to completely redo real estate and build something new where there was something before. So I think that it will have an impact. It'll be spread over the city, and it won't look that different from the typical apartments that we have been building a lot of around Dallas. We'll just build them at a little bit faster clip.
I was just going to say, we've been building a lot of apartments for a long time. And when you say 12,000 over that big of a period of time, that doesn't sound like it would be, as you mentioned, such an extraordinary change right away.
Well, because it's just a relatively small fraction of the landmass of the city that is zoned commercial and is well suited in the sense that there's real estate that probably is underused and should be replaced. I think it'll make a difference. You know, in a city with about 500 and a little over 550,000 housing units, it's meaningful, but it's still in the single digits in terms of how much it adds to our city's housing stock. Office to residential, you've probably looked at this some. Dallas is one of the biggest centers in the country for this happening. I think we're the third biggest in terms of how many are underway, like how many actual apartment buildings are going to exist because of projects that are already, you know, getting worked on. I think we're talking about so far a little over 3,000 units, mostly in downtown Dallas. That's a pretty exciting start. You know, downtown Dallas, if we go back to the year 2000, the population of people who actually lived there was barely above zero. now it's, I think, past 20,000 and growing. And those 3,000 units probably will house some 6,000 or 7,000 additional people. And they'll be oftentimes in walking distance of work and other, you know, amenities, the Arts District, American Airlines Center, and so forth. And it's, you know, that's going to be a real plus.
Couldn't that draw in people too who might otherwise commute?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a fair number of people will have a short commute because of that, and they'll be happy because of it. The issue with office to commercial, as I'm sure you're aware, is most office towers aren't really well suited to it. Most office towers have maybe I think real estate developers will tell you, an excessively large floor plate. Just the physical structure of the building makes it really difficult to build apartments that will have, adequate window exposure and so on. So it's a particular kind of building that is well suited, that is a bit more on the skinny side. CBRE, I think, did a report where they looked at, what are the kind of how many units could be potentially brought into being in buildings that are really well suited in Dallas, and they did this around a number of cities. And I think the answer is the ones that are really well suited, that 3,000 unit count that I gave you a second ago, I think we could probably quadruple that based on CBRE's numbers. So, if the demand is there for these kind of apartments, different kind of apartment, right, in a former office tower, or it may still even be an office tower on some of the floors. But supposing the demand is there, and I think it will be, I think we could get to 10,000 plus units of that sort in downtown Dallas and in the handful of other areas that have high-rise office towers that are potentially a good fit for conversion. So that too will add a significant number of units. And between the two, I think they will add, it'll take a number of years to get there. In fact, I think it might take 20 plus years, but we will probably add, some 7, 8, maybe if we're fortunate, 10% to the city's housing stock just because of this bill.
And these are the kinds of changes that we would see not only in Dallas, but again in those other big urban centers around Texas. Think Fort Worth, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, a lot of places. The complexion could be changing, especially in those downtown areas. In Dallas, I know they've been looking to try to revitalize and bring people back in to actually live in the city, not just work in the heart of the city. Dr. Clark, thanks for kind of walking us through this and giving us a better understanding of not only what we've been through these last, several decades, but what we might be looking at in the next couple of decades to come from a big piece of legislation that I just feel like we didn't hear a whole lot about during the legislative session, even though it can create such a huge change in the cities across Texas.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that in all of the big cities of the state, we will see definitely enough new housing units to make a difference. I think the demand is there. I think the developers are going to want to do it. We already see with the early evidence that big Texas cities are among the leaders in the office to residential conversions. The law makes it a little bit easier. So I'm optimistic about, the downtown Dallas and other big Texas downtowns are going to become live, work, play centers to a lot, more degree than they've been in the past. Not so much the just the monoculture of office towers with white collar office workers going to work and leaving there at 5 p.m. and then the place is a dead zone. Our downtowns are going to get more interesting, and we should be happy about that. I think people talk about re revitalizing downtown Dallas. The single best way to do that is to have human beings living there, going out to eat, at night. That's their neighborhood where they live.
And we will see how the cities handle it and whether they just go along with this and don't tie it up in the courts as you predict that they will go ahead and just move on with this. Dr. Cullum Clark, the director of the Bush Institute and SMU Economic Growth Initiative, thanks so much for being with us here on Yolitics. And please, would you just enjoy a little bit of that Santa Fe aura there for me. New Mexico is an amazing, magical place. So please just take in a deep breath of that for all of us as you spend July there in the beautiful city of Santa Fe.
I will do that, and I am grateful for you having me today. Thank you.
Thank you.